High formation, two receivers right. Second and seven at the Dallas 30. Hutchinson, handoff, Smith and left guard, 35, 40-yard line. Right on the mark. That should do it. Move over, Sweetness. Make a place for Emmett.
That's the voice of the Cowboys, Brad Sham, on that magical day, October 27th, 2002, where Emmett Smith surpassed Walter Payton to become the NFL's all-time leading rusher. I'm Calvin Watkins. Welcome to a special edition of Sports Day Cowboys, brought to you by the Dallas Morning News. I'm going to take you back to the week that Emmett broke the NFL's rushing record. It was an amazing achievement for Smith, who grew up in Pensacola, Florida, dreaming he'd break one of the NFL's most cherished records. In honor of Smith's accomplishment, he spoke to the people who lived it as he tried to surpass Hall of Fame running back Walter Payton, the Chicago Bears. He also talked with the men who tried to stop him. Final chase for the record started that Monday after the Cowboys lost to the Arizona Cardinals and were scheduled to face the Seattle Seahawks next. For Emmett Smith, the record wasn't a thought.
No, you know, to be honest with you, the record was not on my mind. It was really, truly more about Seattle. And I think what makes it, as an athlete, we separate truly what we want to do personally and what we're trying to accomplish as a team. So for me, it was really more about, okay, how do we right this ship? How do I get guys to buy into what we're trying to get accomplished? And how do we get guys to understand what it takes to become the winners that we were in the 90s, early 90s, those Super Bowl teams? Because we weren't that successful that year. So as a veteran of a team that's young, full of inexperienced guys, but guys that had aspirations of becoming successful, you try to figure out how do you tap into that one thing to help them understand that the National Football League stands for not for long, and how do we take advantage of the opportunities that we have before us? And so, no, the record was not necessarily at the forefront of my mind. It was more so trying to win.
Smith ended the 2002 season needing 540 rushing yards to break Payton's record. That was the only worthy thing in a rebuilding season for the Cowboys. Now, Dallas ended the Seattle game with some turmoil. Bench quarterback Quincy Carter is going to start Chad Hutchinson. Meanwhile, Smith entered the Seattle game needing 93 yards to break the record. Despite the struggles of the team, Coach Dave Campbell was determined to keep things focused on winning the game, helping Smith get the record.
You know, it was just a normal week, but, you know, obviously everyone had on their mind that Emmett had a chance to break that record. You know, everybody knew how important it was to him, not so much for the record, but with his relationship with who he was going to break the record. And there's no question that that was on everybody's mind. But, you know, Emmett was pretty much all business. And his mindset was to win the game. I can promise you that. But what comes with it, obviously, was a tremendous accomplishment.
Smith said he wanted everything to be normal that week. It wasn't. Pam Oliver, who covered the game for Fox Sports, and Cowboys safety Darren Woodson felt something different from two different perspectives.
That's him just trying to, like, downplay it all. But he ran really hard, you know, even after the record was broken. I don't remember the production meeting being anything that, you know, was built up either. You know, it's just one of those, I keep using the same word, but everybody was just in there. I think it was one of those situations where we had other information to gather. So we didn't spend that much time discussing it. We knew what was at stake. He knew what was at stake. But I knew the offensive line was ready to get it over with. They were done. They obviously played a huge role in it.
I'll just be honest with you, man, and, you know, hopefully Emmett doesn't get offended by this, but I could give a fuck about that record. I mean, we sucked. We were a bad football team. We were demoralized. The culture within our organization was in a shambles. Honestly, I was dealing with guys being late for meetings, as the captain of the defense, not showing up on, you know, that was frustrating me. Like, my vision was there, my thought process wasn't on in it breaking the record. Matter of fact, I thought it was a distraction to what we were trying to get accomplished as far as getting a win.
Hutchinson, meanwhile, was going through his own emotions. He was joining a long list of quarterbacks trying to replace Hall of Famer Troy Aikman. Hutchinson was excited for the opportunity, but knew this was not about him.
I mean, you know, there was a lot of pomp and circumstance around that week. He was making sure his lime green Lamborghini that he got as a party fit, I think that it fit correctly. He's making sure the six jersey changes were orchestrated appropriately. You know, they wanted to make sure that all the jerseys, there was like a tracking thing in all of our jerseys to make sure that they could track it back to that date and that time. And, like, yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff surrounding the game. So, yeah, I think it was a little bit more than just business as usual.
In Seattle, the Seahawks entered the game with the NFL's worst run defense. After six games, Seattle allowed over 1,100 rushing yards. Oakland, Arizona, and St. Louis all gained over 200 yards against Seattle's defense. Here comes Smith, looking to make history at Texas Stadium. Seattle cornerback Ken Lucas.
I grew up watching Emmitt Smith when I was still in high school and trying to figure out, like, how is this guy able to get all of these yards when it doesn't seem like he's that fast? And, you know, you don't gain an appreciation for his attributes until you're actually out there on the field with him, because even though he didn't look fast or quick, he actually was very quick and very elusive. He had the knack of, you know, making guys miss because he was very low built to the ground, and he had great lateral ability to make you, you know, hop side to side and run through arm tackles. You don't get that appreciation until you get on the field with those type of guys, you know.
Seattle linebacker Orlando Huff.
You know, it was just a course of very intense practice. And that's all we could talk about, was not letting the record get broken on us. Me being the middle linebacker, a young middle linebacker, you know, of course I felt the pressure. Was excited for the challenge. We knew what plays, you know, Dallas ran, and practiced those accordingly. And so we prepared that way.
Smith knew this was his moment. His management team came up with a comprehensive plan to make sure his jersey, cleats, and helmet would be authenticated before heading to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Emmitt and the Cowboys' longtime equipment manager, Mike McCord, explained.
Me and my team did it on our own. We thought about it, and we were prepared for it. As a matter of fact, we were prepared for it throughout the course of the season, because I went and bought approximately 20 jerseys, four helmets, and we had the pants and shoes and locked and loaded throughout the course of the year, and I knew I was going to change jerseys at halftime, not knowing which game it would be. So we were prepared for that season in terms of something incredible happening.
You know, his brother did a lot of the tagging. He would come in after hours, after the team was gone, and he would start tagging the stuff there. And a lot of it was a heat press machine as far as the jerseys go. It was like basically the size of a dime that was underneath a piece of cloth that had the WeTrack logo on it and everything. And so he would just heat press that onto all the jerseys and the pants. But you couldn't do that, obviously, with shoes. And so that's when we used that grain of, like, rice that we put in there. And so we just had all the uniforms set up for him and stuff and kind of did it that way.
Woodson's thoughts about the chase for the record being a distraction wasn't lost on Stephen Jones, the Cowboys' executive vice president. While he enjoyed the marketing approach of the record, he understood the other side of it.
I don't think it was hectic. It was just the anticipation, you know, of what you were about to witness. It was going to be something rare, and, you know, felt like it had a great opportunity to happen. But the anticipation was the big part. I give Emmitt and his people credit. You know, they were all over it. I mean, they knew exactly how they wanted to execute the game, and have some people say, well, there was too much of my mind on the record, not on the game, because his, you know, he was, as you well know, he changed jerseys, cleats, helmets, you know, after every quarter. So he'd have game-worn merchandise, you know, from the game. You know, we obviously were all for it, but the main thing was it wasn't hectic. It was just the anticipation of what you were about to witness. He was just a consistent performer, always available, and, you know, you just didn't feel like anything was a distraction to him, and he just went out and did what Emmitt does well, which is run the football and gain a lot of yards and help us win games.
Jared Payton was a freshman at the University of Miami. Payton was trying to play college football while holding the last name of a famous Hall of Fame father. Jared was 4 years old when his father broke the rushing record, then held by Jim Brown. Now an adult, Jared Payton wasn't feeling the movement of the record.
As a young kid, I always thought that my dad would have that record forever. I never thought someone would break it. So as a kid, I grew up knowing my dad as the all-time leading rusher. And, you know, when he passed away, it was tough because at that time, we didn't know, like, my dad passed, I didn't know how people were going to remember him. And so that record always made me feel like, man, if he has this, like, no one will ever forget him. You know, leading up to that point, I was upset. Not like with Emmett, just upset with the whole entire thought process of my dad might not have that anymore. But it's funny now to look back on it being in my 40s and my relationship with Emmett and how much it's grown and how much he's been there for me. But I laugh at it because I was so young and young-minded back in the day to where I am now, and there's no other person in the world that I'd want to have that record other than him.
The Week 7 game started with Seattle coach Mike Holmgren refusing to speak about the record with Dave Campo during pregame warm-ups. Seattle defensive tackle Chad Eaton told Cowboys starting center Andre Girard Smith wasn't going to break the record. Girard was just a rookie at the time.
I think that's just football. Okay. I think that's just football. And the case of the game, I think, as I said, the defense started the entire game with the intent. And I remember the defensive lineman saying to me, he is not getting this on us today.
Seattle linebacker Orlando Huff heard the noise coming from Eaton and wanted to build off it.
Chad was woofing it all week long. And then I heard it in the game. That's right. Right there. Always woofing.
Seattle cornerback Ken Lucas didn't hear the trash talk, but was also determined to stop Smith from making history. When the first quarter ended, Smith gained 55 yards. He was on his way. After every carry, several players knew how far Smith was from Peyton. The atmosphere was building for something historic. Darryl Moose Johnston was covering the game for Fox Sports. He asked to cover the game because of his close relationship with Smith. He could tell Smith had a little extra juice that day for a 33-year-old running back. Johnston's producers were yelling in his earpiece to get closer to the field for an interview as Smith got closer to the record. Moose was conflicted. He was there to do a job, but he also wanted to support his friend.
Yeah, I knew from the first possession that he was going to get it. He just looked different. Very committed with the run. I mean, there was a pep in his step that day. If you go back and look at his first couple of runs, you know, he ripped off a 12-yard run, a 9-yard run, I think early on in that game. And it was funny because they wanted me to be on the sideline. You know, I was wired. And so they were moving me down. They're like, hey, he's on pace, so let's make sure you're down there when it happens. So we started to head down, and then all of a sudden, you know, he had a negative run, he had a zero run, and I'm like, well, I better get back up to the booth or this isn't going to happen today. Because as soon as I came down, it doesn't look the same anymore. But it was kind of cool being on the sideline because there was that anticipation that was tangible from everybody there. And I think, you know, I would say the majority of the people had the same feel that I did. You know, it was happening that day. And once you got down on the sideline, you know, it was kind of palpable. And that was one of the things I loved working with Tony Siragusa, because he was on the sideline and he could feel things. It's weird. You know, being up in the booth is very sterile. And when I was up there, you know, you're watching him and he looks great. And, hey, he's got a shot at it. But when you got down on the sideline, it was just, there was something different about the energy that was there on the Dallas sideline. So you're like, oh, he's definitely getting it today.
Dave Campo.
That actually happened. I knew if he had X number of yards, and I can't remember what it was. I honestly can't remember how long he ran on the one. But I knew it was not very much yardage. And, you know, I did say to Bruce Coslett, I believe at that time, you know, give him the ball.
With the Cowboys trailing by 7, they got the ball midway through the fourth quarter. The moment was close. Faced with the 1st and 10 from the Dallas 27, Smith got 3 yards. Now it's 2nd and 7 from the 30. There's Pat Summerall.
2nd and 7. Emmett again. Almost broke it for a touchdown, I mean. Emmett Smith has just become the NFL's all-time leading rusher. What a thrill to be a part of it.
Smith darted between the guard and tackle and got tripped up by Huff. Smith crawled a few more yards before getting touched by Lucas. An 11-yard gain, and the record belonged to Smith. Umpire Garth D. Felice was positioned between the linebackers watching Smith approach him. He was in awe.
Oh, no, I enjoyed it. I mean, I wasn't like, I didn't sit down and camp out and have a soda and watch it. But you know, you stand there and you're like, I mean, how can you not be touched? You know, here you are standing on a field in the National Football League. And, you know, this young man has just broken the rushing record. You know, I'm old enough to have watched Jim Brown play. I was much more than about 10 years old, maybe 8, 10 years old. And had Barry Sanders in games and watched Earl Campbell play and on and on and on, you know, and you can't help but be touched and sit there and watch this and go, I'm part of National Football League history here. It's pretty cool to have done that. It's not lost on you, that's for sure.
The game stopped. Smith waved his arms. Michael Irvin jumped up and down. Fox Sports' Pam Oliver got in position to interview Smith's mother. And Texas Stadium was rocking. Emmitt Smith became the NFL's all-time leading rusher. History.
Yeah, I mean, I did trip up a little bit, but I saw what was happening, and I was trying to get there so quickly that if I'd have had my feet underneath me, it's possible that run could have been 50 or 60 yards for a touchdown.
Seattle was not happy. Seattle linebacker Orlando Huff.
I remember like it was yesterday. I think one of the starting guards or tackles got hurt, so they put in a backup. And this is one time I wish I'd never second-guessed myself and I should have shot the hole. I did, and I allowed that tackle to get up on me. And I was still able to make the tackle or get my hands on him and trip him up. That's when he stumbled forward, for the record. But, I mean, I'm the one who should get the credit for tackling and on that play. But if I would have shot the gap or hit the tackle straight down the middle, because the guy was green. I could look in his eyes. He was nervous just as I am. And, you know, if he was a rookie, it was my second year. If I would have done what I was supposed to do, was come downhill, I think it would have took another play for Emmitt to get that record.
Officially, Lucas gets credit with the tackle. It was something he didn't want.
And that was the thing. You know, I can just remember during that week, we knew he was his arm distance away from breaking the record. And none of us on defense wanted to be a part of history for the rest, you know, until somebody else break it. And so we was all trying to avoid being the person to have to make that tackle to where whenever they show them breaking the record, that you always appear. And lo and behold, it was me.
Cowboys would tie the game as Smith dove into the end zone. When Smith got to the sidelines, he hugged Irvin. He slapped hands with whoever was in his view. He hugged equipment manager Mike McCord, the man he gave every football to when he scored a touchdown. On this day, McCord had two footballs, a touchdown and the record breaker. Best hug was with Moose. It was emotional for Smith back then. When talking about it 20 years later, it remains that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, I didn't even realize he was at the game. I didn't realize Michael was at the game. I wasn't that aware of all of my surroundings. I was more keen and focused on what was happening within the team, what was happening on the football field. So to see Michael and to embrace Michael and to see Daryl was a complete shock. That's how focused I was on what I needed to do. I didn't pay attention to who was doing the broadcast. I was so focused on what I needed to do. But to see Daryl on the sideline was emotional, because as a player, you know the guys that was there with you throughout all of this whole process, and you want to share this moment. And as athletes, we always have this vision of how we see things playing out. And I never could envision me becoming an all-time leading rusher without Daryl Johnson on the field, or Mike on the field, or Troy on the field. But as life will play things out, things does not always happen the way we want them to, but they may happen anyway. And to see him on the sideline was an emotional moment.
That was a little bit, not a, you know, it's funny because he always said, you know, like even in his Hall of Fame speech, you know, you took care of me like I was your little brother. And that's kind of been the dynamic of our relationship. So I've always come from a sense of pride, you know, every time he's done something or we've had that moment, it's always been very large sense of pride for me. So, you know, that was the biggest thing. I was grateful for the opportunity, but, you know, everybody always said, why did you come back from your neck injury? And that was the reason why. I wanted to be on the field. I wanted to, you know, to throw the block that sprung him on that last run. But it just wasn't meant to be. That was not God's plan. And it's like one of those things, right? You know, we all have to learn that his plan probably is best for us. And to be able to experience it the way I was, in my opinion, was much better. You know, when I walked away from that moment, I wouldn't have had that moment if we'd have been teammates. It probably would have been a pat on the back, a hug, and then he'd run off and visit with his wife and visit with his family and, you know, catch everybody up. You know, Michael Irvin was there, you know, so the guys who, you know, weren't playing but were a part of it. But when you're not a part of the team and you're not in the huddle, I think it made for a much, much more meaningful moment.
Some don't remember who won the game. Seattle 17-14. It's an afterthought for many, but not the history books. Nobody can take this away from Emmitt Smith. He made history. A Florida kid fulfilling his big dreams. Jared Payton didn't watch the game that day, but over the years, his love for Emmitt grew. He's almost like a second father to him now, thanks to his own father's wishes before he died.
So, like, my pops, before he passed in 99, had a chance to talk with Emmitt, and just Emmitt called him, asked him how he was doing, and said, you know, he's all right, but, you know, my dad asked him to look out for me, and Emmitt said that he would, and Emmitt has held up to his end of the bargain. He has. He's been probably the closest father figure to me. And when I was looking for someone to be that father figure, and I had all these people running in trying to take that position in my life, Emmitt was there in the background and just swooped in and became that person that I could call whenever I needed something, or if I just needed to talk, or he would check up on me. He would, you know, anytime that I need him, if I need him for an event or I need something signed, like he's literally always there. That's why when I look back at how I was feeling as a young kid to where I am now is why I laugh about it, because, you know, the person that I didn't want to break my dad's record ended up becoming that person that really helped fill my dad's shoes for me when I needed him the most as I got older.
Winston became the Cowboys' all-time leading tackler the day Smith broke the rushing record. While the man they call Woody wanted the same thing Smith wanted, a win, his appreciation for what his teammate did grows each day.
Yeah, you know why it's extraordinary to me, man? Is because, and this is why I think Emmitt's one of the special people, person, athlete there is, and this is what separates Emmitt from most, is that Emmitt set this goal, man, years ago, and he did everything to prepare, be in shape, mentally on par, not only winning games, this dude has 3 Super Bowl rings, and was one of the best that I ever seen as far as protecting blitz pickup. His football IQ was tremendous, and he stuck to what always made him special, and that is just doing the little things to get where he needed to be and get to his goal, man. And to see that accomplishment, I was, you know, happy for him and all that. When you really step away from him, peel back that onion, man, that's a tremendous feat for a guy who's undersized, ran a 4.9 probably. He's just the will and the want to get there, man, is something that I just truly admire about him, man.
The day ended with a ceremony on the field with Smith's family. Walter Payton's mother, brother, and sister watched from a suite. A magical day in NFL history was accomplished by the great Emmitt Smith. A banner was dropped from the roof of Texas Stadium, telling the world that he's the NFL's all-time leading rusher. It's something nobody can take away from him.
Oh, yeah, it was a real moment, because I don't know how often people put goals together on their list. I know today a lot of people are talking about vision boards and all these kind of things. And for me, to become the all-time leading rusher when so many people said that I could not do the things that I was able to do, and to be able to survive 13 years in the National Football League and to run for more yards than any man in the history of the game, to see that banner drop at Texas Stadium, because it took me back to when I was a rookie and I got drafted, the day I got drafted. I come to Dallas in my little polka-dotted ass outfit. I go do my interviews and everything else. And Joe Hickman, the Hickman brothers, take me around. And we go to Texas Stadium. And I walk into the tunnel, into the locker room. And then we walk down onto the field. I'd never forget that. And walking down onto the field, and I'm looking around in the stadium, and I see all the Ring of Honor. I see names like Roger Staubach, Dorsett, on and on and on. And I say to myself, one of these days I want to have my name up there. And that's just part of the process of having a vision for what it is that you want to accomplish within the game and within the organization, not knowing whether or not you would have a chance to do it. And so seeing that banner drop was almost solidifying that that piece will happen and other things will happen because I've done something that no other man in the history of the game has ever done. And that is an amazing feeling because so many people sharing that accomplishment that you would never, ever know, might not ever, ever meet, but you might hear their names in the wind.
This special episode of Sports Day Cowboys was produced by Damon Marks, with help by Julie Fisk. Special thanks to Fox Sports and the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network for broadcast audio the Cowboys-Seahawks game. You can stay up to date on every episode of Sports Day Cowboys by following us wherever you get your audio, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find the show and more audio from our newsroom by following the Dallas Morning News in those same players. Find links to everything we do at dallasnews.com/listen. You'll also find a special membership offer there just for listeners. For the news, I'm Calvin Watkins.